10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
All right. We are constantly keeping track of the weather where you are. It's disgusting.
They tried to cancel poor Sydney Sweeney because she said she had great genes. They said she was promoting white supremacy, but we all knew they were full of beans.
1, 2, 3, 4, we all want to see some more.
Now we've got itsy bitsy teeny weeny lingerie from Sydney Sweeney that we saw for the first time today. Itsy bitsy teeny weeny lingerie from Sydney Sweeney. If you don't like it, you're probably gay.
Nate Shalman, program director of KUGN, Eugene, Oregon. 99% of us have no idea where Eugene, Oregon is. But there are only two cities we know of in Oregon: Portland, Oregon, and Eugene. That's it. That's all we know. And KUGN carries Sterling every damn Sunday live. It's 7:09 in Eugene, Oregon. And the brilliant program director, Nate Shulman, thank you. He sent me the best note last week. Yes, I am blessed with fine emails like from Paul Vandenberg in Albany. Thank you, Paul. And Steve Scott in St. Louis is always embarrassed to air my show on KMOX. But to get a note from Eugene, Oregon, from a program director who is programming, according to Peter Thiel, at least two radio stations, maybe more, considering who he works for, he could be programming the entire West Coast. The entire West Coast right now is under his control. But he sent me a note that I won't read you because it'll sound like not a big deal note, but it was. Nate Shulman, thank you, KUGN. Now, Nate, I told you that if you want custom promos, IDs, which you should want, if you need anything, Walter Sterling is here to serve you. Now, when was the last time you heard that in Eugene? There are no sommeliers in Eugene, are there? Who else would serve you? The Pancake House? The IHOP? Waffle House? There's no Waffle House in Eugene, is there? That's pretty much epicentered in Ohio, Kentucky, South Carolina, North Carolina, you know, those fine states. Those fine states are with real Americans, you know, real Americans. We don't even know what the color blue looks like. We're just, you know, real Americans here. And, we keep to ourselves. One of the great myths is that the Midwest, people in the Midwest are friendly. They're friendly and open-hearted, and it's baloney. Absolute nonsense. It has been my experience that most of the people in the Midwest say they are good neighbors, say they are open to being friendly, la, 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 but then push come to shove, I really need something, forget it. Ain't going to happen. Meanwhile, I spent several years living in places like Philadelphia, Manhattan, and whenever there was a problem, as busy as everybody was, and gee, I don't have time for you, and oh my gosh, I'm not going to smile at you on the street, I got things to do. If there was real trouble, oh my gosh, they were there. They were right on top of it. Whatever you need, how can we help you, how's your kid doing? I'll never forget, in Manhattan, I used to go to the same deli bodega every morning, and I'd buy pretty much the same thing every morning. And then I got the flu, and I lived in an apartment building with a doorman, and I got the flu. And 2 or 3 days into the flu, I opened the door of my apartment, and there is a nice carry-out brown bag, a nice-to-go bag, and in it was what I usually ordered. And they had just sent it up, delivered it to me. I didn't ask. I didn't call. They knew there was something wrong. They knew I was sick. That was in the mean, cold, you know, Manhattan canyons of angry people. Well, yeah, they're all angry, but they're also really happy in a strange, bizarre way. Walter Sterling, it's too cold for me to even think. I'm going to admit to you that I'm miserable. I couldn't be more miserable. This is obviously no fun. It's no fun for anybody. You can't really get warm. And it's not going to be above freezing for most of America, for at least 60, 70 million Americans until next week, at the end of the week. We've got 7-8 more days of this crap. And I'm always dazzled by the great advice by all morning men. Be sure to stay inside today. Be sure to stay warm. Really? Do we need you to tell us to stay warm, Mr. Morning Man? Mr. Zoomeister? Oh, and don't get me started. Tomorrow, every Zoomeister in America, all of them, are going to treat Groundhog Day like it's Christmas and the 4th of July. Because there are certain holidays that are morning zoo holidays. And they include April Fool's Day. April Fool's Day and Groundhog Day. There's another goofy holiday that nobody cares about. Valentine's Day. Those are morning zoo holidays where they put all their energy into doing bits. And some of those disc jockeys are actually going to go to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania to witness this incredibly important event. And no thanks. Way too cold for me. And I wouldn't do it anyway. What'd I do? Make fun of the groundhog? You can't win with that. And then there was Mayor de Blasio, New York City Mayor de Blasio, who dropped the groundhog and almost killed it. Or did he? Or did it like a week later it was dead? He like dropped the groundhogs are not meant to be dropped. They don't have the kind of legs that can be dropped. But there was the mayor of New York, who was suddenly a whole lot better than the current mayor of New York, dropping Punxsutawney Phil. But I hate this weather. It makes me sad all day. And it isn't that sun thing. It's just, All right. My name is Walter Sterling. Good evening. This is a live radio show, coast to coast, WGAN to KFBK. Oh, I've got a friend. Oh, wait. I want to say hi to my other friend who is in Portland, Maine. Lee Harvey in cold Maine. Lee Harvey, who listens to us on every goddamn Sunday night. It turns out that today, in 1954, Edward Armstrong, the inventor of FM, committed suicide. That was his amazing achievement of life, and it sure was. And he loved the Father Drucker and Gary Arnell segment we had on Friday night. That was pretty amazing. I'll share that with you coming up in just seconds. Walter Sterling, every damn Sunday night.
Principal of Vice, nabbed. Details later, the people of Walmart, Sterling. Every damn night.
Florida is a beautiful mix of diverse people and cultures. Florida Stories is about them getting arrested. I'm James Parker, Florida Stories, still to come on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, hear about a rookie cop's hazing at a small town police department that ultimately backfired. Coming up in moments on Sterling. Every damn night.
This is Matthias Bohm-Bell. Coming up, my Hollywood report on movies. Live on Sterling. Every damn night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. Walking into the kitchen at our old house, it's like a walk-in freezer. That's what I feel like.
I actually put some whipped cream out on the counter last week to wash the bowl and realized that it was staying frozen, so I left it to see what happens. It's still there.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Headless Man! Details later. Strippers on the Loose. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Snow days, fisherman over day with Sterling every damn night.
You know what I do on days like this is I indulge in time porn. Time porn. Did you watch this HBO show, The White Lotus? The White Lotus is one of those shows that's heralded as being sort of arty, the sort of thing that public television might have committed a few years ago. But now we have HBO for it. I got to turn this up. I got to do that. Yeah, because there's no art here. Wait. I got to make it louder. All right, there you go. Now, so I'm watching The White Lotus. Now, this is season three. And it has Jason Isaacs in it. Now, Jason Isaacs played Cary Grant. Did you see that miniseries of him playing Cary Grant? That was amazing. And more importantly, he was the second Star Trek captain of Star Trek Discovery, by far the worst Star Trek. Just god-awful. Right? Jeez. Well, it had Jason Isaacs in it. And Parker Posey, the alt queen of the 90s. And they're in it. I'm like, okay, well, I'll watch it. And the first two seasons were pretty good. Had a pretty good time. This season, I don't know, was it 9 episodes? 1,000 episodes? It felt like about 1,300 episodes. And I kept waiting for anything to happen in The White Lotus. It took place in, not Tahiti, which would have been good. I blocked it because I couldn't stand it. But it was one of those South Pacific islands where everything is very slow and there are a lot of drugs involved and a lot of nefarious people go there to sort of hide. And it's one of those. And it takes place in this very exclusive, expensive resort. Right there, that's pornography for a capitalist. Here's an expensive vacation and no time pressure. There's no clock anywhere. In fact, one of the things the hotel wants to do is take your phone to allow you to fully enjoy the experience of being trapped in the middle of nowhere. And after the first episode of nothing happening, I'm like, oh, well, they're setting everything up. And gee, it's beautiful. Beautiful resort, beautiful people, everybody's nice. The woman who played Bertha in the Gilded Age, she's in it, except now she's blonde. That's the magic of television. Can you believe that? So Bertha's now blonde, and she's no longer married to a guy who owns a railroad. She's married to nobody, and she's vaguely angry at 40. She's angry at 40, and now she's blonde. And Linda Bibb. Leslie Bibb, who is the star of Popular. Do you remember the CW show Popular? Or the WB show Popular? Do you remember that? Oh, yeah. Her. Yeah, she was really hot and popular. And now you want to feel good about yourself? She's in her 50s. Popular went off the air in the year 2000. So now she's in her 50s. And I'm looking at this cast like, all right, this should be pretty good. And then the next episode and the next episode and nothing happens. All they do is we get to see a travelogue of where they're staying in the South Pacific and pretty women and guys wrestling and Russians boning Bertha from the Gilded Age. And I keep waiting for anything to happen. Because you see, at the first two episodes of The White Lotus, the first two seasons, it started with a murder. There was no murder at the beginning of this. And I keep waiting for Cary Grant to do something. But Cary Grant never did anything. He committed fraud on the mainland. But he never tells his family. Are you getting bored? That's how it was for me. But I'm also a broadcaster. And I'm looking at this, and I'm like, this cost a fortune. First, they shot it in the South Pacific. This guy White, get it, the White Lotus, the guy who created it, Barry White, whatever his name is, directed every episode. I think he just wanted a vacation in the South Pacific, in Tahiti. I think he just wanted a vacation. Oh, now I have to look up where they shot it. Where the heck they shoot it? The White Lotus location. Oh my God! Well, they actually shot it in. That's to Thailand. Sorry, in Thailand at a Four Seasons resort in Thailand. And what I think this was a scam. I think he got HBO to give him a must have been 6 months to shoot this thing, to shoot in Thailand at a Four Seasons resort, Koh Samui. Four Seasons Resort, Koh Samui. I'm going to pronounce it like I'm from Jersey because I'm from Jersey. But I'm watching this, and what is it? Why is this not moving? Why do people think this is great? You know what it is? It's time porn. These people have no time pressure. Compare that to your life or my endless life. It's no clocks, no watches. They take away their cell phones. You don't see a clock anywhere, not in the lobby, not in the rooms. That's what it is. It's time pornography. So was Seinfeld. There were those grown-ups with no discernible means of income walking around doing whatever they wanted to do as though they were 13. When they were 13, they didn't have to do anything either. There was no clock then. And now on Seinfeld, there was no clock. And on The White Lotus, that damn thing will win Emmys. It doesn't deserve anything except for photography. The setups are too long. The music is too annoying. It's got this bongo, the damn bongo. The bongo is the lead instrument for the whole series. I was insanely disappointed in this. And granted, it's a luxury problem to have the time to be insanely disappointed in a TV show. But I said to my wife, I want to see the end of it. And she's like, I can't stand another minute. Now, she's obsessed with British TV. To me, there's nothing more boring than all British television. How is it possible for that to be that many murders in British seaside towns? How is that possible? But boy, every one of those is a high crime location. But even she hated it, and she likes British television. And I had to beg her to watch it with me because, you know, when you're married, the ultimate crime you can make is to watch a episodic show without your spouse. Oh, you watched this already? Why did you watch it? Did you watch it without me? And I'm like, no. Sometimes it just runs on when I leave the room and I was waiting for you to come. All right, Mateus Boom Boom from Hollywood with you and me, Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday. On the West Coast, in California, Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, with a very boring and dull weekend of movies that he's going to share with us tonight. Mateus, do you feel honored to be on this show versus, oh, say, the Grammys?
Absolutely. I think this is the place to be. After all, I mean, where else can you have this level of entertainment? I don't know. I love this show. I'd miss the Grammys for this any night.
I think what's shocking about the Grammys is most of the artists and almost all of the songs, you can sit there and go, I have no idea what they're talking about. yes, we've heard of Lady Gaga, and she won something. And Bad Bunny, we know of him, but we don't know of his songs. How many has Taylor won so far? Isn't it her actual ceremony, or didn't she get nominated this year?
I haven't followed the Grammys yet tonight, so I haven't tuned over there. I was going to take a peek after we have our little chinwag tonight.
Well, now, speaking of our chat, I'm looking at Variety and I'm studying the movies because I'm a pop culture kind of guy, and I see nothing noteworthy this weekend. Or am I wrong? I mean, Jodie Foster, we always have to speak of her with reverence, but she's always angry. In every movie, she's the angriest woman there ever is, and yet she's rich, and she commits the fine arts of lesbianism on a regular basis. Why would she be so angry? She's always angry. Does she ever do a rom-com? Has she ever done a rom-com?
You know, I remember when I was not too far from KUGN studios in my youth, I used to summer in Myrtle Creek, Oregon, and I would go by train to Eugene, get off the train and go 80 miles south to Myrtle Creek, where there was a Rio Theater. And in 1976, my grandmother took me to see Jodie Foster in a movie called Bugsy Malone. I thought she was not angry in that film. She played the whole cast was teenagers dressed up as 20s gangsters running around in these cars, which had Tommy guns that shot whipped cream instead of bullets. This is the real honest to God movie. And Jodie Foster plays a woman of the evening. Now, she must have been 14 years old. This is just before she did Taxi Driver. And so in that film, she was not mad, but it was a charming film. She sang
that was the last time.
My name is Tallulah. It was probably, that's right.
I think that was the last time. Ever since then, she's angry in the movies. She's angry when she gives speeches. She must have, maybe she doesn't have good lesbianism.
When I saw her last year at the Critics' Choice Awards, she was just walking in this straight beeline across all the tables with purpose, as if she was probably angry at something and either on her way out or on her way to someone to tell her how she's feeling. But it's interesting that she seems to be driven in this way. But, you know, maybe that's her motivational force.
Well, Mateus Boom Boom in Hollywood, that may be her motivational force. But like I say, she is always angry. But we never find out why. Now, she's been with the same woman for a very long time. Didn't they adopt a kid?
I don't know.
That's going to be months of study. We have two movies to talk about. We talk about hers, and I want to know the results of Melania. How'd Melania do?
Well, Melania, interestingly enough, has done much better than many people, certainly in Hollywood and California, thought that it would do. And I was impressed. It earned $7.4 million since opening on January 30th. So that's, what, a whole 3 days, and exceeded the initial projections. People thought, oh, the picture will make $3 million or $5 million. This is Amazon MGM that released it, and it represents only a small fraction of Amazon's investment in the movie, which included $40 million to acquire it and $35 million in marketing. However, it's in 1,778 theaters in the United States, and would you believe the audience attendance is strongest in Florida and Texas? However, here in California, you can go deer hunting in the upper section of the theaters because they're empty. So it's really interesting because this makes this probably one of the biggest earning documentaries for a non-music documentary in over a decade. So it's doing much better than anticipated, at least from the Hollywood side of things. But we have to remember there are parts of the country that would find it interesting.
It shouldn't a documentary be based on facts?
Well, one would hope, but I have yet seen it, so I can't even give you an opinion on whether I thought it was remarkably
so you were hoping,
to being factual or not.
Mateus Boom Boom, you were hoping it'd be out of theaters before it was an issue for you to see it or not. Now it's going to be around at least two more weeks. You're going to have to see
it. Yeah, I'm going to probably have to go see it. That's true. And of course, the story is that it documents her life during the 20 days leading up to the 2025 inauguration. But, you know, Prime Video and Amazon is looking at it. Maybe if it performs really well, it may be part of a 3-part series on her life that they'll put on the streamer. Who knows? But it's certainly performing much better than Hollywood anticipated.
But the fact is she owned the movie and she had final cut, and therefore cannot possibly be a documentary. This is her confection of her life and how she wants to be seen. And you have that kind of money, you have that kind of power. Good for you. She has that kind of power. And but that's the deal. I mean, this is I'm not saying don't see it. I'm just saying recognize it for what it is.
Right, and Brett Ratner, who is the director, I don't know how much directing he actually did, given the pressures you've just illustrated, but, you know, he's known primarily for action movies. He's done so many of those movies with Jackie Chan, the Rush Hour series. He did X-Men, the Red Dragon.
The Rush Hour series, that was a documentary.
Of Jackie Chan's amazing skills, or
yes, exactly. All right. So did you like the Jodie Foster movie? What's it called?
I did like the Jodie Foster movie. It's a private life. She plays a divorced psychiatrist from the USA working in Paris. It's a pretty cush job. She's got a steady clientele, but however, she's deeply affected when she gets the news that one of her clients has died, and she starts getting very emotional about it. She's very worried about it. She goes under hypnosis, and while under hypnosis, she gets the idea that this woman was murdered, and she didn't bump herself off. And so she starts to investigate this on her own when the police won't respond to her suggestion that maybe she was murdered. And the end result is she finds out many things that were not quite right, and it's entirely possible she was murdered. So that's it was beautifully made, beautifully photographed, and she's good in it. And she doesn't seem angry all the time, but she still has that expression of anger that must never leave her face.
Is she angry in a French way?
Yes, it's probably even more angry than we can get here.
Can't even imagine. All right, Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, how do I find you online?
At Matias Bombal's Hollywood on Facebook, Walter. That's MATIASBOMBAL apostrophe S, Hollywood, like the city, on Facebook.
Sterling every damn Sunday.
Principal of Vice, nabbed. Details later, the people of Walmart, Sterling. Every damn night.
Florida is a beautiful mix of diverse people and cultures. Florida Stories is about them getting arrested. I'm James Parker. Florida Stories, still to come on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, hear about a rookie cop's hazing at a small-town police department that ultimately backfired. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here, walking into the kitchen at our old house. It's like a walk-in freezer. That's what I feel like.
I actually put some whipped cream out on the counter last week to wash the bowl and realized that it was staying frozen, so I left it to see what happens. It's still there.
Coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Headless man. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling. Sterling Every Damn Night. Sterling across the USA.
All right, look at this. It's 51 minutes past the hour. 51 minutes past the hour. Coast to coast. Are we in the 18-wheeler? Are we driving on 80, 90, the 4, the 5, the 101? It's just you and me. This is, in fact, the best time of year to be in that 18-wheeler. But it's not the best time of year to have that mic cord. Ay, ay, ay. There, how's that sound, Sean? All right? All right, sound okay? Sound good? All right. But this is the best time of year to be in the 18-wheeler because it's a cocoon. I admire any truck driver right now because you're safe. and no one's going to bug you about where the temperature is. It's your truck. You're in charge. And you've got the dash adjusted just the way you like it. The lights are the way you want them. And it's a sweet spot in the ride. At about 51 minutes past the hour, pushing toward midnight, this is a nice, you're still rested, you still feel good, you just had dinner. It's fantastic. And then you can sleep in the back. You realize that everybody who's never driven a truck, everybody who's never ridden in a 18-wheeler, a real 18-wheeler with a great cab, is very curious about your sleeping quarters. We're fascinated by it. Most of us know they're there, but we've never seen them. And now, slowly, a few truckers are putting out YouTube videos where they're showing us the sleeping quarters. And I, for one, find it guy-fascinating. I would suggest that, safe to say, no girl finds it fascinating, and I respect that. It's okay. It's nothing they need to assimilate. But I think all guys want to see those sleeping areas, where you guys sleep. And then if I were to sleep in one of those, I would probably feel claustrophobic. Is that ever a problem? And I'd be very scared at 3 a.m. if I heard the sounds right outside the cab, or somebody scratching on that door. That would scare the Jesus out of me. I also happen to believe that every 18-wheeler carries a gun. I don't think they talk about it, and they certainly have a license. They have gun carry. What do they call it? Something in carry? Mr. Carry or something? They have a license where they carry a gun. Is this true? Does every 18-wheeler carry a gun? Are they encouraged to by their company? Especially the independent truck drivers. Is there trouble between independents and corporate truck drivers over spots and slots and who gets to unload first? I didn't realize till later in life that the line for unloading a truck is a very political thing. You think you have politics at work or in the beauty shop or the nail salon where you work. The politics of where a trucker gets in line to unload his truck is a big deal. And I suspect there's a lot of jockeying based on who's strongest, whose company spends the most money, where, and does the dock itself get to decide which order that the trucks can unload in? These are things that fascinate us guys. This is a guy thing. And every boy loves trucks. Of all the toys I have from my childhood, I still have my metal trucks. I got a set of trucks. Did you ever get a set of trucks? Oh, man. I got a set of trucks. One was an 18-wheeler, a beautiful model of an 18-wheeler made out of metal, about 2.5 feet long, 1 foot high. It was a real toy, like I could push it around and shove it. It was made out of metal. And then it also had a car carrier and a fire engine. Those are the three trucks that came with it. I still have those. Of all the toys from my childhood, I still have those. And I've given them to my daughters, and they played with them. I felt very good about that. The toy I wish I had was a Thinkatron. A Thinkatron. A Thinkatron was a primitive computer, a card reader computer. And you put in a punch card, and on the card it said, Washington is the capital of what country? A, B, C. And C would be the United States. And you put it in, and it'd go, and then on this screen, made up of pixels, three-dimensional pixels, it would say C. It was amazing. It was our first brush with computers, except that actually worked. It took quite a while for my laptops to get to the point where they would just work. And my printer still does not work. I've never owned a printer that just works. I haven't had a lot of stories on this show because I can't print them out. I'm waiting, 8 days for the printer to decide it's going to work. Or I'm going to have to do what? Throw it out, get a new printer, waste $65 on it, and waste $130 a month on blades. Printing heads, right? That's a scam. Because did you ever break open one of the printing heads? Do you ever see what was in there? Did you ever open it up? Did you expect to see a well of ink? A robust amount of ink? You know what's in there? Nothing. Two tiny little sponges. Tiny. Quarter inch by a quarter of an inch sponges. Soaked in ink. But just two. And the rest of it's open space. This is some scam. That costs those companies absolutely nothing. Can you imagine that? But nobody has a good printer story. Many people love their computer, but nobody says, oh man, I really love my printer. I have the best printer. Never heard it. Have you ever heard that? No, we've never heard that. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday night, a joy to be with you. And yeah, it's a live radio show on Sunday night, son of a gun.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
I don't care how stupid it may seem. I'm putting that thermostat at 78. Let's go insane. Another musical masterpiece by legendary maestro Lee Harris, executive producer of Sterling Every Damn Night, our musical director, Lee Harris. Brilliant broadcaster, entrepreneur, and good friend. All right, Midnight Misfit, Al Carson, Robert Gaw. John Lieberman. Hey, Lieberman, when are you going to send us a feature? We love your features. Keith Mortensen. Now, Keith is the genius among us. For many years, he lived in Bucks County, drove a truck for United Parcel, an 18-wheeler for United Parcel, not one of those silly little ones. He drove an 18-wheeler for United Parcel, and now he retired. Remember what you promised yourself you were going to do, and you can't? You can't retire, and therefore you're working. But he actually planned it. He did what his mother said. Keith Mortensen did what his mother said and planned his life, making it possible to save his money and retire to Florida. He built himself his dream retirement home. He has his niece visit him on a regular basis. What a lucky niece to have an uncle who has a home in Florida. He built it to his specs in one of those nice communities, not some senior citizen home. Keith does not need anybody to get up and tune the radio for him. Keith is a very strong, able retiree. How old are you, Keith? I'm guessing you're like 58. You got it made, man. Randy West, Robert Bachman, Charlie Van Dyke, the legendary voiceover talent, Dale Parsons, brilliant programmer, Peter Bolger, the first programmer to say to his corporation, Cumulus, I'm putting Sterling on the air on WLS in Chicago. And if Peter was still there, it would still be on the air. But people with less of a sense of humor got involved. And Casey Bartholomew, who's a terrific talent and was kind enough to give me 2 days off last week. Did I need them? No, not really. But I like Casey a lot, and he's a great talent, and he was kind enough to do the show. And this is not an easy show to do. Do you know why? There's nothing to copy. Have you heard a show like this before? No. Maybe, you know, decades ago. But you've never heard a show like this. Now, what am I going to do? What can I copy? I tune up and down the dial, and what do I hear? I hear old men screaming at the Democrats. Boy, there's some entertainment. What great entertainment value is that? I had a program director last week say to me, now, do you think that the station is leaning too much to legislative issues on the right or legislate. I'm like, no, the misfits want to hear about water in the basement. That's what you and I care about. Is there water in the basement? There's no higher priority for you and me on any given day than to open the basement door and see water on the basement floor. If we see water on the basement floor, you don't care what's on the editorial page of the New York Times, or worse, oh, this is the funniest story. Oh, this is so funny. In Northeastern newspapers and many media publications, there's endless whining about this new woman in charge of CBS News, and all of these people are very worried. She told them, you wouldn't believe what she told her news department this week. She told them to think like a startup. What? What? I have to think? No, that wasn't the issue. She wanted them to think like a startup. None of them would know what that means. For starters, what a startup means is you're not sure if you're going to get paid next week. That's item number one. That's a true startup. You have no idea if you're going to get paid next week. Item number two is, do you have good data on whether or not anybody cares about you or your product? Then, are you going to have enough money to get to next month? Those are the big issues. And she's thinking, you know, I want them to be rough and ready. I want them to look for ways to save money, ways to seize opportunity to make this bigger. How do we grow audience? They have no idea. All of them kissed butt to get those jobs, had fancy degrees from Columbia Journalism School or the Newhouse School at Syracuse or the Missouri School of Journalism, University of Missouri School of Journalism, or the University of Arizona School of Journalism, the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism at the University of Arizona. And they all wanted to get a degree to go forth and commit journalism. They wanted to join the elite of the history of journalists. Well, their news and what happens in that cocoon in New York and Los Angeles and Washington, their news has no resemblance to your news and mine. What's my news? Check engine light, water in the basement, trouble at school, kid doesn't sound good, does my spouse still love me, in-law trouble. That's my news. That's my news. How about you? Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday night.
The people of Walmart Sterling every damn night.
When you were in junior high, I'm guessing it was a lot like me, the one person you wanted to avoid was the vice principal. The principal of vice. That was the person that you had to go see. They were the ones who called your mom or dad or whatever parental unit you may have had to report you, to narc you out for doing something, you know, reasonably naughty. Generally sarcastic. That drives teachers absolutely nuts. Trust me. I know all about that. Vice Principal Courtney Janelle Shaw was in Cherokee County, Georgia. Yeah, the home of the Bulldogs. But she's not a Bulldogs fan. She happens to be a big fan of Ohio State. And on her social media, she has pictures of her and Brutus. So she's been going to the Walmart and going through self-checkout. Couldn't help herself. And was nabbed for stealing $1,000 worth of stuff at self-checkout. I'm going to give you something that you'll need to know and to understand. Self-checkout, the antennas go up with loss prevention. When you have a buggy full of stuff, it's loaded up to the brim. And you're in there and they know how much you're ringing up. And they're going, yeah, that doesn't add up. That doesn't work. And Vice Principal Shaw, yeah, she's been placed under arrest, in handcuffs. She's reasonably attractive, too. Perhaps, you know, we could role play with some handcuffs. I think that would be great. two decades, this beloved educator has been teaching children about the lessons of the day and probably telling them that ice is bad. Yeah, ice, terrible. Terrible. Go out and protest ICE. I'm sure that was in her bailiwick, right? She's been placed on administrative leave and likely is going to be, shown the door. Apparently, this woman was going in and out of that Walmart stealing all the time. And, they took pictures of her cars. They also have license plate readers. I'm going to tell you, as a man of modest means, if you're going to steal, figure out how to get away. And Courtney Shaw did not know how to do that. And she's likely going to be unemployed and perhaps become a Walmart associate. Probably not, but who am I? I've met a couple of Walmart associates that, look like they may have had a brush with the law or two. Maybe we'll find her there. I think that's great. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling, Sterling, Walter Sterling, every damn night.
There's a bakery, a retail bakery.
Feel the dough, eat the dough, JB Bakery, Selena and Steve, Sterling every damn night.
When you tell me you're turning on my mic, then I think I have to talk. I'm very simple. So what you want to say is, JB Bakery jingle, and then you turn up my mic, and then I don't step on my own jingles. This is not serious. These are luxury problems. Now, there's Steve the baker and Selena, the head of marketing at JB Bakery. JB Bakery is a retail bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. And I respect all entrepreneurs. Anybody who has a business, started it from scratch, works 24 hours a day, never takes a vacation, that's America. And that's worth respect. Bonus track, oh my God, they make baked goods. They make baked goods, not a hardware store. Who cares about that? They make baked goods, amazing baked goods. And if you look on Facebook, JB Baker, you can see endless samples of what he makes. And then this weird thing happened. A Catholic priest shows up. A retired Catholic priest shows up and decides to hang out. No, not for a day, forever. As a retired Catholic priest, a major in the Air Force, he's at the JB Bakery pretty much all the time. I don't know how the patrons of the bakery react to this. But in this weather, my family was a family of retailers. And one of the things that retailers, in my experience, do is they keep a log of the weather. And they can look back on sales a year back, 6 months back, and they can match it up with the weather and see if there is a weather trend. Does the business do better in bad weather or worse in bad weather? How about yours? Does it do better? Does the baking business do better in bad weather or worse?
Walter, the business does great pretty much all the time. When it's raining,
okay,
people
now you have
want
to be
eat.
Quiet. Now you have to be quiet. No one's going to believe you. Selena, does the business do better in bad weather or worse in bad weather?
Well, it depends on what you mean by better or worse. Bread always does better when people think there's a huge storm or they're not going to be able to get out of the house. Everybody wants to be able to freeze something and have extra bread and extra food. I mean, and then the pastries also do better. I think that bad weather, really bad weather, yes. I think business is better when it's some kind of crazy storm. But I think when it's just enough that it's uncomfortable to get out, but you don't really want to DoorDash, and I think that sometimes that kind of bad weather, when it's just a little bit, I don't think the business does as good.
Now, Father Drucker, I know you claim to be sick the past 2 or 3 weeks. How are you feeling now?
I'm beginning to recover from this viral infection. My doctor never told me, Dr. Sideri, Drew Sideri, what it was. Anyway, he said it was viral, and I've been coughing a lot and whatever. And today's one of the first days that I'm up and around and doing a little bit better. But I haven't been at the bakery for 4 weeks, and I finally talked to Steve yesterday, and he said, everyone misses me, I think. Is that true?
they're asking about you, Father. And plus, we have an overabundance of creme brulee, so you got to get on it. You got to eat them up.
Yeah, that's my favorite, Walter.
Now, Father, oh, I don't blame you. Now, Father Drucker, do you have a vaporizer in your bedroom?
No, I do not. I should get one, maybe.
No, you need to get one tomorrow. Because if you're do you have steam heat? What kind of heat do you have?
I'm not even sure. It's like lodging in a military lodging. I don't know. Maybe electric. I don't know. I'm not pretty good with that stuff.
Whatever it is, it dries out the air, and the drier the air, the harder it is on your bronchial system, on your lungs. Mm. You need to have steam. Steam around you. You need to get a vaporizer. It needs to be warm. Don't get a cold air vaporizer. You need a warm vaporizer, and you will feel dramatically better, dramatically fast.
Well, Dr. Sterling, I thank you very much for that advice, and I will heed it.
The thing about steam, it's like pretty safe. It's hardly medical advice. Don't get confused. Now that you're not there for a month, you miss the creme brulee. What else do you miss, Father Drucker?
I miss Serena, I miss Steve, I miss Olivia, I miss Ellie, I miss Tom at night. I miss wonderful people that I love very much, and I miss the patrons that stop and say hello to me, and that I pull over and say hello to them. And we swap stories, and many times there's many military, and they see my military hat from Desert Storm, and
MPs?
We get talking. And
are those MPs looking for you?
Maybe now that I may major, I don't know, God knows.
All right, now listen, Father Drucker, do you darn it, I forgot what I was going to ask you. So sad. Selena, how do you feel these videos are going? So on Facebook right now, you can see JB Bakery videos, and I think they've improved dramatically because you're on them much more.
Yeah, I agree with that, too, but it seems that sometimes they do better and sometimes they don't. Steve's videos will still do 200 likes easy, and I know that mine can do so much more. But I do have a really exciting thing. If you go on our Facebook, JB Bakery, right now, there's a Mardi Gras menu, and that's coming up Fat Tuesday right before Lent. And we make the best king cakes ever, anywhere, and that's really big on TikTok in the South right now, is where can you get the best king cake for Mardi Gras? We have the best one hands down, and if you want one, you can email jbbakery@aol.com or send us a message, or you can email Walter, and we can send you one for Mardi Gras. So if anybody wants a king cake, we have the best one, and that's on Instagram and Facebook right now.
What is that?
So a king cake, it's a traditional Mardi Gras dessert, and it's the one where it has the baby inside, and if you get the baby in your slice, it's good luck. Usually people bring it to the office or to a party, and it's the most delicious, soft, almost like a brioche bread with cinnamon on the inside, and it's got frosting and sprinkles and beads, and it's all decorated, of course, the baby, and we serve them with a couple different kinds of fillings. There's a pudding filling, there's cherry filling, which of course is very popular, and other kinds of fruits that people like to buy sometimes too.
What's the cream filling? What flavor is that?
It's vanilla pudding.
Oh, my God. I just have to sit in silence for a moment to think about this. This is the most excitement I'm going to have today. I appreciate it. I do appreciate it. Do you have a recipe for us tonight, Steve? Do you have a recipe?
Walter, I got the best bread pudding recipe ever. I sent that to you. Bread pudding is made best with leftover bread, dinner rolls. If you have some Italian bread, that's good. Texas toast is really good. If you go to like a Costco and you grab up the Texas toast, or go to your local bakery, bakeries usually have, if they're local to your house, go there, ask them, hey, do you have any stales? That's a key word. That's a code word, stales. Ask for stales. Make up the recipe.
All right. Stop. JB Bakery, bread pudding recipe. Send me a note. I'll send it to you.
They tried to cancel poor Sydney Sweeney because she said she had great genes. They said she was promoting white supremacy, but we all knew they were full of beans.
1, 2, 3, 4. We all want to see some more.
Now we've got
got itsy bitsy teeny weeny lingerie from Sydney Sweeney that we saw for the first time today. Itsy bitsy teeny weeny lingerie from Sydney Sweeney. If you don't like it, you're probably gay.
Maybe when we break up from a quarrel.
Retired detective. I'd like to tell a story about my days of working for a small police department in Florida. After retiring from the NYPD, I got hired in South Florida to work for a small police department. And it was so different than working from the NYPD. And I get it. Even though I was 40 years old and had 20-year experience, I was the new guy, which was fine with me. I didn't mind being back on patrol and answering jobs. But what I did mind was my coworkers, who were half my age, were trying to put one over on me all the time. One time I was with my training officer, and this veteran cop, probably about in the late 30s, calls us over. We pull up and he hands us this letter. It's an anonymous letter that someone, his neighbor, is dealing weed out of this building. The training officer reads it. He hands it to me and I go, yeah. And he goes, well, I think this would be good training for you. I crumbled up the piece of paper and I threw it through the window and I hit him. I go, you go look into it. I said, don't try to pour your crap on me. But the craziest thing was I'm working a 4 to 12 one night with my training officer and another cop calls us to the scene of this debacle. And when we get there, you got a guy who's driving a truck with a trailer. The boat flipped off the trailer. There was a call that there was a domestic violence incident and the guy threw a pizza out the window. So you got a possible DUI, a possible domestic violence and littering. So I'm standing there looking at this crap and the other cop drove off. So now it's ours. So the training officer goes, all right, test him for DUI. So I get out of the car. I'm talking to the guy. I make him go through the whole coordination test. The guy just barely passes. He passed. I said, okay, where's your girlfriend? She took off. Okay, so that's two down, one to go. I go, what about the box of pizza? He goes, I don't know where that came from. So the training officer is looking at me, and he goes, well, what do you think we should do? I says, I think we should call a tow company and help this moron get his trailer out of the ditch and get his boat back on it and get the hell out of here. So as we're waiting on the tow truck, who shows up but the girlfriend? And she's drunk as a skunk. She had a lot more to drink than her boyfriend. She was a knock-around kind of gal that you would find hanging off a bar stool in a local sawdust joint. So I walk up to her, and I took the domestic violence aspect of the thing seriously. I go, did he put his hands on you? She goes, no. I said, okay. I says, did he hit you or anything? No, 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 no. She goes, but I bought this pizza, and he threw it out the window. I says, well, all these other things, I'm not charging this guy with littering. So when we got back into the station house, I found the cop that tried pawning this off on us. And I said, you ever do this to me again, I'm going to crazy glue your locker shut. So that was the end of that. So for more behind the scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Behind the Blue Wall of Silence.
Lesbians in space, Sterling
but when you're with her, you're thinking about me, aren't you?
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night. Ah!
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you about living with our 8 kids in our old house. And I do mean old house. So we're in a deep freeze in our area, and it is drafty. The windows rattle. Walking into the kitchen actually feels like, if you worked at a restaurant, you were walking into a walk-in freezer.
When we left this morning, one of the kids had earmuffs on in order to be able to stand by the sink and actually do the dishes. Oh. It's terrible. When you get next to that window, the curtains, I have them, these thermal curtains stapled around this huge old window in the kitchen, and they are blowing in. It's like these big puffs of air just blow in, and you can put your hand up there and it turns to ice. It actually freezes the dish soap, when we put the dish soap up there, right by that window. It sounds like the whole house is unlivable, but really it's just like in these drafty areas, it gets super cold.
So this has caused you to take up all of your granny habits?
Right, because this is the best time of year to sit under a big half-finished blanket and crochet, right? So yeah, my granny habits come back in full force.
And do you want to talk about how you were going to throw hands at some ladies at the craft store?
You want to talk about me wanting to throw hands, because I really did come out of there wanting to throw hands. So yes, granny habits are in full force, and I have little girls coming over to sit and crochet with me like we're in some old movie in our old Victorian house, and we needed more project yarn. And what I like to do when I do a project with the girls is I like for their project to match my project. So obviously they're going to have a little tiny sweater if I have a larger sweater. So I have the yarns picked out, the pink for the girls, and mine's going to be in a brown. Same exact yarns, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this group of ladies that comes in, and they're like, we're going to make cozy blankets for our houses. Never done this before. They're looking at the hook size, the yarn size, don't know what's going on. They're trying to figure it out. And I put down my matching yarns next to me, get the girls to bring me a cart and put their yarn in the cart. Well, I turn my back to do that. They snag my yarn. Yeah. They snag my yarn, and I'm chasing them around the Michaels. Like, did you pick up my yarn? Did you pick up my yarn that's there?
I'm home in the drafty house. I learned about this via text message. I was ready for a fight to break out.
You were. And I will say that you were probably home under one of the cozy blankets that I've made. But the saving grace in all of this, I think, is that they think they're going out to get these things and they're going to make these projects. But as one of my daughters looked at them and saw the yarn they were picking out to do this project, she looked at them and said, yeah, they're going to quit after two rows. So Good luck with my yarn, ladies. Good luck with my yarn. Keep warm and stay out of my way.
Yes, stay warm. Follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you're looking for me, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night. Oh, yeah!
The mythology that the big high school quarterback years later is a used car salesman, that he hit his peak in high school. Whereas you, a nerd, hit your peak when you were about 32 and you were working on computer programs and you were writing code. But the theory is that each of us hits a peak and then two things can happen. Either you or culture keeps you at that peak, or you decide to move on. And I saw this video, and I've just posted it on Facebook. Your grandparents or great-grandparents know about a television entertainer named Steve Allen. Steve Allen was the original host of The Tonight Show. In the 50s, he invented the genre, decided where the couch should be, where the monologue should be, what sort of tone it should have. He invented it on NBC. And his announcer, by the way, was Gene Rayburn. And they made that show together. He hosted The Tonight Show for about 8 or 9 years. And David Letterman used to sit there and look at videotapes of Steve Allen doing it. He thought that was the best guy. But even Steve Allen had a moment where it was his peak. And I posted this video. It was in 1958. And he wrote this song. Steve Allen wrote this song, and I'll share why I'm talking about this in a second, but just listen to a little bit of it.
Well, sir, it's always an awful lot of fun doing a show from Hollywood, and in particular from these Burbank studios. It's a very friendly place, you know. George Gobel and Eddie Fisher are right down the hall.
George Gobel.
Down in this direction, Dinah Shore is ready to go on. And I think we're going to drop in on Dinah right now. She's a great gal, and who knows, a friendly little visit like this could be the start of something.
You're walking along the street, or you're at a party.
Or else you're alone, and then you suddenly dig.
It's an astonishing video, because what it is Steve Allen, who wrote this song, is the lead singer in this song, as he's walking the halls of NBC Studios in Burbank, California, he's gathering up other stars of that moment, and they're all walking the hall with him, singing this song, lip-synced, of course, but technically, whoa, like light years ahead of that moment in time. But the other part of it is, I'm looking at Mr. Allen, and he's glowing. They're singing his song, his best song. And these are the biggest stars of 1958, doing what he wants them to do. Why? Because at that moment in 1958, he was the biggest television star. You and I can't even imagine what kind of power that is. He was on every game show. He was the guest star in every other variety show. It was his medium that he helped invent. That was his moment. For the rest of his life, not in a pejorative way, but for the rest of his life, he tried to repeat this moment, the feeling he had at this moment, where he was untouchable. He was huge. Right age, right time, right friends, right show. He says one of the biggest mistakes he ever made was giving up The Tonight Show, but it's exhausting. Doing that show, that'd be exhausting. The difference between, I think, a life well lived and a life lived with regret, and I don't know if Steve had any regrets, but a life well lived and a life well lived, is that after you and I have that moment, after we have that moment where we're like, we hit the home run, we got the girl, we did the best dance at the prom, we got the award from the company, after that moment, do we live in that moment, or do we kind of forget it and move on? Not a big deal, and you go for the next mountain, the next achievement. And I believe the people who are happier, from what I can see, are those who are always focused on the future. that there are families I've sat at dinner with them or friends I've had dinner with, and they're always talking about the next thing. The brilliant television programmer, Fred Silverman, he programmed NBC, CBS, ABC. Much of the way television exists to this day is because of what Fred imagined. I became friends with him. He hired me at NBC. We became friends. He came to my wedding. It was an honor. But any time I'd go to have lunch with Fred Silverman, I couldn't get him to tell stories about the past. He had no nostalgia in him. That was done, don't care. I couldn't get him to tell me any stories. He would only talk to me about the next pilot, the next idea, the next cable channel. That's all he would do. He lived in the future. He lived in the next achievement. And he taught me a lot from that. I have tried to do that. It's crazy that I'm doing this show for 12 years. I'm having the best time. I've never done anything this long, and I've had some success, mostly in the form of three daughters, Dorothy, Meredith, and Samantha, and a beautiful, endlessly patient wife, Kathleen. Yes, of course. They are by far the greatest achievement. What's the best thing about kids? They drag you into the future. You got to plan the next thing with them. You have to pay attention to what they're doing tomorrow, next month. They drag us into the future. There is no nostalgia if you have teenage kids. There's just hopes and prayers that they come home. I'm Walter M. Sterling. I've got an email. It's waltermsterling@gmail. KDKA. Hey. WalterMSterling@gmail, and a great website, Walter Sterling Show, where you can become an official Midnight Misfit, an official Midnight Misfit like Phil Zachary and Paul Vandenberg and Robert Gaw and Keith Mortensen and Neil Paul and Mrs. Paul. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
What the hell are you doing? You don't go outside in this weather. Don't even think about it.
Sterling every night. Lost in space. Mission control.
The always dependable Dave Scott, a gift from outer space, a gift from the aliens. Linda Furrow, Midnight Misfit, welcome. The bread pudding recipe is on the way to you. Anthony Nicklep, I'm sorry, it's not you, it's my eyes. I even rehearsed it. Hold on, Nick Lajotti. Yes, Anthony Nick Lajotti. And Jill Butler, thank God there's an easy one in there. Thank you very much for being Midnight Misfits. Welcome. You've asked for response, gifts, whatever you need. You send me an email to waltermsterling@gmail. By the way, you know, this is the only radio station, and this is the only radio show that actually still has jingles. If you hear any of the jingles, especially the parody songs that you think would entertain your friends, we will be happy to email you an MP3 of it. Now, Dave Scott, have you ever heard of any other broadcaster offering up their jingles to the general public?
No, it's not done. We usually, broadcasters are very selfish about their things.
Exactly. Now, Dave Scott is in Canada. He's an expert on metaphysics, UFOs, Bigfoot, scary sounds of the night. He's a journalist and a great broadcaster. SpacedOutRadio.com is his website, and Spaced Out Radio is the name of his show that you can find on YouTube. And he's a good friend of the show, and he's a good friend of mine. David, how cold is it in Canada?
Well, you know what? We're running at about 35, 36 degrees right now. And the really scary part about it is a lot of people will say, yay, the snow is melting. Yeah. But when you live in the forest like I do, you don't want that snow to melt this quickly. So hopefully February, it cools down. We get a bunch more snow. It's not looking like that. You and the East Coast seem to be stealing all of our snow. We'd like it back if you don't mind, because I'd sooner have a cold, snowy winter than a summer filled with forest fires.
Yes, and it's one of the many gifts of the Canadians to give us nonstop forest fires all summer.
Well, you know what? At least it's tariff-free.
That's funny. That's funny. T-E-R-R-A, is that what you said?
Tariff-free, yes.
Oh, tariff. Oh, I got it. All right, what news do you have from above, Mr. Scott?
Well, the UFO world is quite slow right now, wondering what is going to happen with the latest news of potential hearings once again and movies coming out. So I figured, you know, we get a lot of skeptics, and I know you're kind of skeptical at times about some of the topics I talk about. So I figured this story, Walter, because this is one of the ones that completely intrigues me, and I want to try this out so bad. It is called the Philip Experiment. Okay, so for those who haven't heard about the Philip Experiment, back in Toronto in 1972, there was this paranormal group called the Toronto Society for Psychiatrical Research. Okay, and basically what they did was they were like, can we actually scientifically create our own ghost? So they attempted it, and they came up with this person. They created a person named Philip Eilsford. He's from the UK. He had a certain age. They actually had an artist draw pictures of what they felt he would look like, from eye color to hair color to body size, how he would look in fashion. And they drew him back. I believe he was from like the 1700s or 1800s. And they gave him a personality. They created relationships, like, for instance, giving him a mom and dad and siblings with names and a girlfriend. And they did all of this stuff that you and I would do if we were regular humans like we are right now. So over time, once they created this personality, they actually started doing something to communicate with him. They actually started holding weekly regular seance meetings around a table. They used dim lights, soft music, and they focused on visualization of what Philip would look like. Now, after several months, Walter, of nothing happening, the group all of a sudden started getting knocks on the table, like somebody was going on the table. And the table would start lifting, and it was tilting. And apparently, it was starting to respond to yes-no questions. So when they asked, Philip, is this you? The table would respond by tilting it one way or the other. And this went on. They never were able to see a visual apparition of Philip, but it was filmed, it was documented, and they really questioned the idea that psychokinesis and group consciousness can actually create what we call in this field tulpas, which are imaginary spirits that we have put our energy into and have actually created a spirit. Many people believe, for instance, if you've ever heard of Bloody Mary or the Hat Man or Siren Head or somebody like that, these creepy pasta type creatures that are said to haunt us, they never existed 40, 50 years ago. What they did do is they ended up, Walter, being created because so many people with creepypasta were actually putting energy, believing that these creatures were real. And now all of a sudden, people, especially teenagers from the age of 13 to 16, were actually having encounters with these creatures like the Hat Man or Slender Man, or doing Bloody Mary, where you stand in front of a mirror with a candle and you chant the name Bloody Mary three times. And apparently this ugly hag will show up in the mirror to scare you and start to haunt you. So is it the power of us that is creating ghosts? Or is there some sort of phenomena that we could tap into to create spirits that aren't really spirits?
Spirits AI.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Spaced Out Radio on YouTube. Spaced Out Radio with Dave Scott. Thank you for being on Sterling every damn night.
August in beautiful Anaheim, California. There was a feller found with his head away from his body. Yeah, he was decapitated. And apparently the decapitator was Alyssa Marie Lira. She's been charged with one count of murder with a felony enhancement for personally using a weapon. Yeah, nothing about the beheading. Nothing about the beheading at all. One would think there would have to be charges over the death, allegedly, of the feller she was dating. 23-year-old Lira was hanging out for several months with 55-year-old Enrique Gonzalez Carbajal. I think, Enrique, yo, that ain't a bad way to go out. You're in your 50s, she's 23, she's an exotic dancer. Apparently he met her at the club. And I didn't realize, single guys, a great place to meet chicks is at your neighborhood jiggle joint. That gentleman's club in your neighborhood, doggone it, is filled up with ladies. And many of them are looking for some sort of a sugar daddy type situation. Why not you? So Alila had escaped to Mexico, and the FBI was helping out, as well as Mexican authorities, and they picked her up. Returned her to Estados Unidos, where this woman is going to be facing a long time in the joint. A long time indeed. Beheading people. It's really not why you go to the champagne room. You go to the champagne room, you pay a lady a little bit of dollars, let her do some dancing for you, tell you that you're a charming and wonderful man, and then she goes out to the next guy and does the same thing. That's what a champagne room moment is supposed to be. But Enrique, he fell in love with the stripper, which is not a good idea. Not a good idea at all. And now he's beheaded. From the champagne room, where in my noggin? I'm Velo Hool, Strippers on the Loose, Sterling every damn night.
Snow days, spend your hungover days with Sterling every damn night.
I can't stand to see you sad, I can't bear to hear you cry. You can't tell me what you need. All I can do is wonder why. Someday, someway, someday, someway, yeah, no. Someday, someway, maybe I'll understand you. After all you've done for me, all I really want to do is take the love you've brought my way. Give it all right back to you. Someday, 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 someway, yeah. Someday, someway, maybe you'll understand me. You've taken everything from me. I've taken everything from you. Sad. I can't bear to
hear you cry. You can't tell me what you need. All I can do is wonder why.
Do you know who that is? Yes, it's your favorite group from the 90s. That's S Club 7. Yes, you had a crush on every one of them.
Maduro. I just grabbed this guy named Maduro. And suddenly he found out what happens when you F around. Maduro. We just nailed this freaking Maduro, and all his narco-commie friends will soon meet similar ends. Maduro, if I were him, I would really start praying that his execution will be delaying. Maduro, I'll never stop taunting Maduro.
Another time porn show that I watch is I'll start watching that stupid game show network with dead hosts, and I realize then I'm 20 episodes into the
and
match
production
game.
Number 1416, and it's take one.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Stand by.
And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Upon a music, John. Push
get
in.
Ready to match the
and
stars.
Turn it.
Charlie's Angels, David Doyle.
And put in 2.
Brett Summers.
And put in 1.
Charles Nelson Reddy.
And put in 2.
From Nash, Loretta Swift.
And put in 1.
Joey Mitchell.
And put in 2.
Fanny Flay.
And put in 5.
That's the play of the star-shot big money match game 79.
Amazing. Those are the director calls to the cameraman. On YouTube, you can find those. Match Game Slate. And then you hear the director calls. That's the most fun I can have. I can listen to that all day. Hell, what a loser am I? How sad is my life? But I'll watch episode after episode of the Match Game or What's My Line in Black and White. A show I never watched as a kid because it was boring. They were in tuxedos, they were grown-ups, they were making erudite comments. I didn't understand what erudite was. I didn't understand that for many years. It wasn't until deep into my 30s when I actually ate at the 21 Club, and I'm like, oh, this is the erudite menu. This is what's going on here. And I'll watch this for hours, and I learned something about both of them. Both created by Mark Goodson. Same man created them. But they were perfect. They were the same every episode. The directing was the same every episode. The camera angles were the same every episode. And they were happy. People were happy. They knew the rules. They knew what they had to do. And it was perfect. You watch a game show now, one that's been made in the last 10 years. They're sloppy. Do you really believe that Drew Carey's having a good time? I don't. I think he's looking at $12 million a year paycheck and more power to him, the king of Parma. There he is, the king of Parma. But I don't think he's having a good time. I believed Bob Barker was having a really good time because Bob and Gene Rayburn, they all had one thing in common. And boy, this is more than you ever wanted to hear tonight about game shows. They understood that it was about the game and not about them. And the mistake every time when they put a stand-up comic on a talk show host, game show host job, those guys are always going for the punchline. Drew Carey's always going for the punchline. And Gene Rayburn, Bob Barker, they knew that the reward was the game and seeing the participants having fun and winning at the game. Well, what's the answer? Okay. So anyway, I answer your emails. It's waltermsterling@gmail.com. Spectacular website. Find out everything you didn't want to know about the show. Walter Sterling Show. You can become a Midnight Misfit by going there.
Sterling every damn night from sea to shining sea.
James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey there, welcome to Florida Stories. All right, we're starting now with the real messed up situation here. A Florida teacher was beaten and hospitalized after being attacked by a 5-year-old student. Sounds like a punchline when James says it. So, okay. Here's the local NBC affiliate in Fort Lauderdale.
Police say a 5-year-old in a pre-K class at Pines Lakes Elementary School in Pembroke Pines allegedly attacked a teacher at the school Wednesday morning. According to the police report, the student continuously hit the teacher. Police say they found the teacher sitting on the ground against the wall. She was, quote, feeling faint, weak, and dazed before she started coughing and dry heaving. She was then taken by ambulance to the hospital.
See, it's not just me being a crazy person. A little bit of context here. The 5-year-old is a special needs kid that weighs up to 60 pounds. The teacher is 5'4" and described as slender. So she probably doesn't outweigh him by much, but it sounds like he threw himself on her. She tripped and on the way down, her head hit the wall. And then the kid continued to punch her and stuff after she was passed out. She's on a ventilator. I don't know if she's going to be okay. But when you ask me how many kindergartners would it take to beat me up? All of them. All the kindergartners in Florida. I could beat them all up at the same time. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to Gainesville, and they aren't all tragic, horrible crime stories where a teacher's getting beat up or someone's on bath salts. There's good stories. There's a 17-year-old senior in high school, and he's a smart kid. He's on the math team. He takes college courses half the day. And at 1 a.m. one night, he got up. He gets himself a glass of water. On the way back to bed, he thinks of a new technique to solve integral equations. It's a calculus technique, and it's been confirmed by mathematicians from the University of Cornell who got it published, peer review so far. It's standing up, and it looks like some 17-year-old nerd in Florida invented a new calculus technique.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to Clearwater. We're an old man in his 70s coming out of a Target. There's a 65-year-old woman who says, "Hey, remember me?" And he does the thing that you do when you don't remember. Yeah. And so she comes up and she gives him a big hug. And he's like, "Where do I know you from?" And she comes up with some dumb story, you know, like, "I know you through Jeff or John or something." And it's kind of suspicious, but kind of nice. Anyway, she gives him another hug and walks off. When he gets home, his credit card's missing out of his wallet. So he thinks, "Hang on a second. Is that lady a pickpocket?" So the man goes back to the Target, tells security the story. Security takes him back. They're pretty cool about it. Let's review the tape. And sure enough, there's an angle of him when she's giving a hug, reaching back in his pocket, pulling out his wallet, talking to him some more while removing his credit card, putting it back in his pocket on the hug return. And so they call the cops. And the cops are like, "Oh, wow, this is the fourth time it's happened, and you guys have the best video of it so far." And they got her, 65-year-old elderly woman. This is her jam. She pretends to know even older guys and gives them like hugs. And she, you know, she's cute for a 65-year-old. And she swipes their credit cards or wallets or whatever they have in their pockets in the meantime, sometimes tries to return it. But you and I both know that she's done this more than four times. It's just four times that she's gotten caught. And, you know, if it happened to me, I wouldn't even know. I would just think I'd lost my credit card. I was, "Oh, man, did I leave it in Target? Or I probably left it in the strip club that me and Walter went to last night." Hold my beer. All right, for our next Florida story, we're going to Boca Raton, which translates to rat mouth. This is Florida. This is Boca Raton. Cops can smell meth from like 60 yards away. Cops see a guy with a container on the back of his bicycle, doesn't have a reflector on the back. And the guy looks shady as hell. If meth were a person, it would look like this Florida man. But the interesting part is when they pull him over, they go to search his bike. That case on the back of his bike is a National Dairy case. You haven't heard of it, but it's a dairy that used to have the milkman that would deliver it to your house. I don't think they do it anymore, but on the case, it's marked with a warning that says, use by other than registered owner is punishable by law. And so they went and looked up this obscure law, and sure enough, even though there's no such thing as a milkman these days, there's an extra misdemeanor charge that's being thrown on top of there. And of course, yes, he had meth in the case on the back of his bikes. The old misuse of a milkman case. Actually, the charges are methamphetamine possession and illegal possession of a dairy case. Never heard that before, have you? Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
What? For our next floor story, let's go to Miami Beach, where I like Starbucks. My wife loves Starbucks, but this 27-year-old Florida man loves Starbucks just a little too much because he's and, of course, the customers are going to complain. When the staff asks him to stop, he doesn't, and so they call the cops. And when the cops show up, he takes off running. I mean, he pulls up his pants and starts running. So one of the cops gets close enough to him, pulls out his little taser, and the prongs come out and hit him in the back while he's running, and he just drops like a piece of lumber, just boom, like a 2x4. And so the cop and his partner are trying to wrestle him over onto his stomach to get him in cuffs and, like, sit still, and he keeps resisting. And so while the prongs are still in him, he hits him with a second jolt. Well, the 27-year-old Florida wanker pulls the prongs out of his back, gets up, takes off again. So the cops get up and they take off again. Right now, there's some backup showing up. So now there's four cops chasing this guy. Cop number two pulls out his taser. They catch up to him. He shoots him in the back. The prongs stick in his back. He goes down like a board again. The other cops tackle him and they're trying to get him over on his stomach. They hit the extra charge because he's still resisting. He pulls out the prongs. He goes again. He gets tased 8 times. 8 times before they actually get him in cuffs, which I think may be a new Florida story record. I've heard of 6 times. I heard of a guy getting tased in the scrotum, but I don't think I've ever heard of a guy getting tased 8 times. So, yeah, that must have been some really good coffee. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to Pinellas County, where an 80-year-old Florida man is preying on an even older victim, 88 years old. And it's a classic fraud case. He gets him to invest in some property. He ends up skimming like $300,000 of the money for himself. So it's like one of these normal white-collar crimes. Just nothing sexy about it. It's just odd to see an 80-year-old scamming an 88-year-old. You know, you got to watch out for those 80-year-old scammers. Isn't he like in the age range where he's supposed to be the one getting scammed? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next floor story, we're going to Bartow, Florida. Where, I don't know the details of this. The story wasn't very helpful, so I'm just going to read you the headline from WFLA.com. Holt County teacher accused of biting two students over jar of pickles. Jar of pickles isn't a euphemism for anything. It was a literal jar of pickles. And we'll just leave it right there. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going to Spring Hill. It's a suburb in the Tampa area. Florida man's hanging out at the bar. Meet some friends, they're drinking. Turns out, hey, I like the party. You like the party? Oh, yeah, I like the party. You like the party? I got some stuff. Let's just go and smoke some in the parking lot right now. So they go out and they smoke some meth in the parking lot. And he goes, oh, man, this is great. Do you have some more I could buy? Sure, I have some you could buy. And so he buys some meth from this random dude that he just met at the bar that night that they smoked drugs in the parking lot together. And so when he gets home, he looks at it, he's like, wait a second. This doesn't look like the meth that he sold me. Did I get a bait and switch? Is this like good meth or bad meth or bath salts or something else? And so he's a little, you know, paranoid because he's been smoking real meth, and he calls the cops and he says, hey, don't y'all have those like little test kits to see if it's like real meth or not? And like, yeah. They're like, well, can you test my meth to see if it's real? And they're like, come on downtown. So he literally drives to the station and they arrest him. The Florida man claims he was just trying to do the right thing because if he did get sold some fake meth, he wants to be able to warn other people who've been buying meth from this random guy at the bar. That he's selling them not good stuff. Yes, he's like Consumer Reports for Florida meth. What a great guy. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going back to Clearwater. You've been busy lately. 60-year-old Florida man, maybe among the worst neighbors ever. He got drunk a couple months ago, and in his enthusiasm, he started shooting off a firearm into a pond. Not really that big of a deal, except he's in his car still, and it's not his pond. So you can't just be running around on other people's property squeezing rounds out of your car, even if it is into a body of water. So he's already out on an $11,000 bond. When he goes to his trailer, And apparently there's some sort of dispute going on with the neighbor in the lot next door. So he goes to the dude's front porch, gets on a chair, squats over a glass top table, and drops a deuce. The homeowner has the deuce on two separate angles from surveillance cameras. So the cops go over to the dude's RV in the lot next door. He's still naked, and they're talking to him through his screen door, and he's a little drunk. You know, sometimes I get upset with my neighbor because his dog barks a lot. But you know what? It doesn't seem too bad after all.
Hold my beer.
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, Conquering the Skies. Geneva led him to the darkened bedroom. From outside the window, lights from the surrounding city cast the small space in a muted glow, allowing her to navigate through the shadows with ease. Standing beside the bed, she turned around and put her hand up. Wait, stay there. He paused in the doorway. Why? She tugged at the hem of her blouse, but didn't make any effort to remove it. Because half the time, when you undress me, I wind up having to buy new lingerie. Ash laughed, yet his mirth soon faded. I thought it was kind of a running thing between us by this point. But if it bothers you, I can stop. Her hands dropped to her sides, and she exhaled. Most of the time, I don't mind, she admitted. If nothing else, I should be glad you still find me so irresistible after so long. His eyes glittered in the wan lighting. Always. Grasping the thin fabric, she pulled her shirt off over her head and let it flutter to the floor. His chest heaved as his intense stare remained trained on her, but he stood in place several feet away. She slid her pants down her legs and kicked them to the side before straightening. Though tempted to test the limits of his patience, she quickly shed her bra and panties and added them to the growing pile, never taking her gaze off his. A muscle in his jaw twitched. Are you done? Yes. As soon as the word left her mouth, he was at her side, one arm encircling her waist, while his other hand fisted in her hair. He slammed her body into his as he assaulted her lips with a rough kiss. While their tongues tangled together, she jerked his shirt out of the top of his shorts, desperate to feel more of him. A devilish chuckle resonated from his throat as he pulled it off, and he gave her hip a playful squeeze. Don't you think this is a bit of a double standard? He muttered against her mouth. Excuse me, I've never destroyed a single article of clothing of yours. She tugged at his waistband until the button popped open, but proceeded no further. However, if you want me to stop... Not at all. I was merely pointing it out. His shorts dropped to the floor, soon followed by his boxers. With nothing left to impede her access to him, Geneva closed the gap between them again, pressing along the length of him. He swallowed back a groan and returned his hands to her waist. As their lips reconnected, one palm skimmed up her side, rising to caress the outer curve of her chest. Sharp teeth tugged at her lower lip as his fingers sank into her flesh. The varying sensations made her dizzy with desire. Stepping away from him, she attempted to guide him toward the bed, but Ash yanked her back. Now who's impatient? He growled near her ear. Before she could respond, he drew her earlobe into his mouth and gave it a nip. One arm kept her locked in place while his free hand resumed massaging her. She made one last half-hearted effort to twist out of his grasp and end his torment, but there was no escape. Helpless, she leaned into him as his tongue traced the outer ridge of her ear and pulsed against her. Abandoning the soft flesh of her chest, he worked his way between them, arriving at the apex of her thighs. She shuddered, silently willing him to go farther. His teeth grazed her delicate skin again. "It's always good to see I can still get the same reactions out of you, too," he said. "Oh, I think that's a good place to stop for tonight, but you know you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my book, Conquering the Skies, which is available at Amazon on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Email waltermsterling@gmail.com. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Music director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero, Sean Walsh, Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker, James Copeland, that's me, Randy Thomas, Charlie Van Dyke, Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Dan and Becky Gaffney, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brook and Matus Bumball, Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Quantum Physics Dave Scott, a Canadian, Ross Coulthart, an Australian, Skullduggery Vic Ferrari, Blessings Father James Drucker, Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser, Writer Jerry the Writer, Business Guidance Craig Kitchen, Program originated by Chris Olivero, Long-Suffering Executives David Yadgroff and Greg Stalker, with respect Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.
I'm a great